Welcome to the Prodigal and the Priest podcast, a podcast about faith, sports, and two friends from different cultures. Here are your hosts, Joey Scansella and Father Paul Bechter.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to season three, first kind of official episode where we do anything of meaning here on this podcast. You heard us last week just kind of banter and update you on our lives, but we know why you listen. You listen for the laughs, the jokes, the sports, and some spiritual things, I guess, as well. So we're going to jump in today. Can you hear me, Father Paul?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, just making sure.
About the order of those things. I think most people listen for the sports.
I wish that was anyway. True, actually. I wish our podcast was just related to sports. but so we're going to jump in today. One of the things y'all requested last year when you had reached out to us was you love the series. You've recommended series to people. I had somebody the other day just talking to me saying, hey, I remember when you guys did the series on the Mass. I've sent that to a few different people in my family and relatives and different things, and it's just impacted them a lot. And so praise God, that has been so impactful for us as well to be able to dive into different topics that we love, that we like to debate and share different perspective on. But I had an interesting one that came up, and I think we had mentioned it last episode, but I wanted to toss out a series on tithing. So this will be a multi episode series on tithing that we're going to jump into today with part one. And I don't know, I just want to toss out why it's so important. I think as Catholics largely, we struggle at times with tithing. I'm not sure we're always as diligent with it, or the expectation is there as much as our Protestant brothers and sisters. And that's not all of them, right? But I think largely a lot of other denominations, it's just like an expectation. You give 10%. And as Catholics, I think over the years, as the baskets continued to be passed down the pews and stuff like that, you still see a lot of people dropping in a dollar or things like that, right? And we're very blessed at St. Anne's, different parishes in the diocese, that there's people that truly get tithing and get sacrificial giving. But I was recently at a meeting of a bunch of guys, very active Catholic men in the diocese. And I wanted to share this. They took a survey and they shared 3 points. The survey had 3 questions. All right, you ready, Father? So the first was your name. No, I'm just kidding. No, that wasn't the first question. The first question was how much, and I assume most people actually answered on their net, not their gross. Okay, so go with that as well. But okay, they asked first, they said, how much percentage wise would you say you spend a year on vacations? Okay, so they asked that first. And like I said, about 40 people answered this survey. And these are active Catholics. Then they asked how much percentage wise you give to your retirement fund. And then they asked percentage wise, what do you give to the church? Any guesses before we jump in? So how much percentage wise do you think people answered about vacations?
Vacations. I would say, my guess,
yeah,
not what I spend, of course, but my guess would be between 5 and 10%.
Okay, so that's actually a little higher. It was around 3%. Now, okay, you know, that can go a long way depending on their salary. So they went percentage wise, you know, so yeah, compared to what you probably spend, you know, 10 to 20 to 30%, you know, on your vacations,
yeah, but at least 30,
when your salary is like $15,000 or something, you have a little bit less. But, okay, what about retirement? Now, just for people's perspective, you can't, you know, you can't bring in really your perspective or my perspective, to be honest, as a youth minister, not the best at retirement, and yours as a priest, so much is on you to take care in the future because you don't like have a family, can't rely on kids, you know, things like that. So I know a lot of priests that put away a lot for retirement, more than even a normal person who is diligent. But what do you think the average was for percentage wise for retirement?
Maybe 20%.
Man, you're going high on all these, but I like it. I like the aggression. So it was around 12%. 12%. Okay. So not too far off.
I've got no baseline. Just throwing out numbers.
And then the fun one, when we look at the church, okay? And the question was specifically, they did a great job of saying, how much do you give to the church? Which we'll get into later, or maybe even next episode of. That's so broad, because what are we really talking about too when we're talking tithing? Are we saying like, hey, I donate to these missionaries and I donate to these other things, right? Like, are we, so they use the word church, and I, in my head, answer of like how much I give to St. Anne's, right? So that was just my definition in my head. I don't know if everybody came from it the same way.
I think that's what most people would hear when they hear the church, is they would think like the church building where they go to and what parish that is.
Right.
I don't think that many people would expand that to be like the church as the body of Christ or the church universal. Or
right.
Things outside of their parish. Although that is like an important perspective.
Yeah, for sure.
And real meaning to the word church. Yeah, I bet it is. I mean, how many decimal places can I go to on this?
I
bet it's less than 1% of their annual income.
So you go high on vacations, you go high on retirement.
You see my opinion.
Now, I want to just reiterate and say, I'm giving you a chance to change.
People are very generous.
To change your answer. These are 40 of, I would say, the most active Catholic men.
Oh, yeah. I forgot the... Yeah,
the context of your audience.
Yeah, totally different. Okay. No, I was just thinking people in general who are very generous. I'm not saying anything.
Right. No, but I would agree with you on the 1% or a little bit less of general people, right?
Yeah, because I think that, you know, unless somebody has listened to an incredible podcast series on tithing like we're about to give.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's probably kind of an afterthought. Like, oh yeah, the collection basket again. What do I have in my wallet? I don't carry cash anymore. Okay, well, yeah, maybe next time. Like that's why I was going for that. If it's an afterthought, I think it is. It's somewhere in the pretty minuscule range. But for that group, I would say on average, 10%.
So I would have guessed the same, to be quite honest.
Because they're a very intentional group.
Right. And this is why I think, and it'll be interesting to talk about it. I think overall, this group's at 10%. When they answered it within the church, though, it averaged out to about 5%. Because I think they're saying, yes, the physical building of, you know, St. Anne's or whatever parish they're part of, right? And I think they probably do give an additional 5% to other organizations and things. Mm-hmm. But church-wise... 5%. Any shock on those numbers? Any like just initial thoughts on that study that I heard?
So it was 3, 12, and 10.
Yeah, and that's roughly. It's like rounding up. Yeah. Like the tithe for the church was actually, I think they said something like 4.8972, you know, something like that. Yeah. So I was like, I gave
3,
that 5.
12 and 5.
3, 12, and 5.
12 and 5. Okay, so yeah, I know that you explained the context. I wasn't thinking of it. And so I would first revise my vacation guess.
Okay, you can't proactively go back and change this.
Post-actively. yeah. So the thing about those numbers that stands out is the disparity between supporting the church and saving for retirement. I think that's the strongest disparity between 5 and 12%. I think the vacation actually 3 seems fairly moderate and reasonable.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like raising a family and balancing vacations with that, but that doesn't seem excessive in any way.
Right.
At least the number 3%.
I was surprised. I was surprised by the retirement.
Yeah, and the 12, and I think that's interesting in light of, you know, some of the scriptures that we'll want to talk about eventually, because of just the way that the scriptures talk about the power of money to save and to grant security, and what it looks like to store up treasure in heaven, basically, what true retirement looks like.
Right, right. Well, I just thought that was a fun little kind of entry point to it. Let's though give some context for our people. I hear different terms, Father, toss out from tithing to giving to almsgiving. Can we break those down for people? Just generally speaking, I think we're going to use a lot of the word of tithing and almsgiving when we're presenting in this series. Mm-hmm. But let's take it one at a time. Tithing, right? What does the church mean by that?
Yeah, so these are terms that first you can use as synonyms, like you can use them interchangeably just to mean charitable giving, but they do have more specific meanings. Tithing has to do with 10%. That's where the etymology of the word comes from. You can kind of hear it with the t part, like tithing, tenth. There's a similar kind of root there. And when the church uses the word tithing, it's talking specifically about support given to the local church in order for its upkeep and for its mission. So to keep the lights on, the air conditioning on, and to keep the mission of the parish going. Local church means both parish and diocese, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You can use that a bit interchangeably too. So yeah, by tithing, we don't really mean giving to someone who is homeless on the street. We use a different word for that when we're speaking precisely. Tithing means support given to the church for the sake of the upkeep and the continuance of the mission of the church. And okay. It's a precept of the church. You can find it in the catechism. Tithing is something that is part of what Catholics do.
Do you remember that time you were talking about like the five precepts and you forgot one on the altar?
Don't challenge me right now. I don't know. I might forget more than one right now.
I don't think 5% of Catholics could name right now, just spit them off, right?
Oh, we just barely. I bet more could name the apostles. All 12 apostles. Or, I don't know, okay.
10. I think 10 they can name solidly. I think like most don't know 2 James, you know, that there's 2 of them. I don't think most know like Philip, you know, like there's certain ones that like, yeah. Mm. I think they could name the 10 commandments, get closer on that,
ooh,
which is funny. I think they could go know 10 things, but not remember the 5 precepts.
Yeah. We never talk about the 5 precepts.
Maybe we should do a series on the 5 precepts of the church.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to write that down in our doc for future series, like 5 precepts of the church. Okay. So let's jump into into the next one, giving.
Yeah, giving, I would just say, like, refers to the actual act of giving itself, no matter where it's directed. And we don't use it as a technical term that much. It's more of an umbrella term. But if we were to zoom in a little bit on it, it would, I think you could look at the act of giving as, what spiritual good does it bring about in me when I give? St. Paul at one point gives this quote from Jesus himself, which is not found in the Gospels. It's very interesting. I don't want to go too far down that. But he says, as the Lord Jesus says, it's better to give than to receive. And then you look through the Gospels and you're like, where did he say that? And that should already kind of shake up our understanding of what the Gospels are. They're not a complete record of everything. And what tradition is that's handed down to us through, like, Pauline letters, for instance. But when we talk about giving, I think it's important for us to look at what does it do to me when I give? And especially when I give, say, as like the widow gives, when she gives her whole livelihood, like Jesus says, when he's teaching the apostles and they're watching this poor widow throw in the two coins in the temple. So when we talk about tithing, we're talking about where does it go and what is the purpose? It's for the support of the church and the mission of the church,
right?
Particularly the local church. And when we talk about giving, we're sort of flipping the focus and looking in, what does it do to me and in my relationship with God and with others when I give?
Right. Awesome. And then last but not least, one of my personal favorites in terms, almsgiving. We hear it primarily during Lent, right? Prayer, fasting, almsgiving. But I just think it's important that people hear that term and get familiar with it.
Yeah. Almsgiving is a really, really cool term. It's got a lot of like interesting stuff in Greek and also the Hebrew underneath it. The Greek for almsgiving is literally the word mercy, eleemosune. So like if you've ever sung Kyrie eleison at Mass, that means in Greek, Lord have mercy. Eleison means have mercy. And so the same word is what gets translated into the Latin tradition and picked up in English as almsgiving, A-L-M-S, alms, have to do with mercy. Eleemosune. Almsgiving is when you give to someone who is in need, like in a very specific way. And so I wouldn't want to define it like overly precisely.
Right.
But we do often use it kind of as distinct from tithing. We would say tithing is a different thing. Tithing is a precept of the church, which means that it is an expected practice given by the church.
Right.
And it's for the support of the church. Almsgiving is an act of mercy. And it's not an expected practice of the church in that sense. Like we go to confession every year is one of the other precepts.
Right.
Almsgiving or the giving of mercy to someone in need is something commanded to us by the Gospels, by Jesus himself. And that's why we talk about in Lent, these three penitential and spiritual practices of prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. Like those are things that can and should be habitual in us, in the sense of like, they're not just one-offs, but they don't have the same kind of stability that tithing would have. So like, if I'm tithing it, and we'll talk about the practicals another time, but if I'm tithing, an easy way to make sure that I am contributing to the support of the local church is to set like an auto pay, right? And you can do that for almsgiving, but you lose a little bit of the like direct contact of meeting the specific needs of this specific person with an act of mercy. And so almsgiving might look, in our digital age anyway, might look more like contributing to a GoFundMe,
right?
For someone who has lost a family member and now has to pay for funeral costs.
Yeah.
Almsgiving looks like encountering the homeless. It looks like volunteering with associations that encounter the poor and serve Christ in the poor,
right,
in different ways. Almsgiving is an act of mercy that sort of is more focused in a way on individuals than like tithing, which is focused on the upkeep of the church and the support of the church's mission.
Yeah.
So that's the way I think about it. I don't want to get too specific and then have somebody be like, well, that's not exactly what someone else said or another priest said or whatever.
So and you would
be
like
a little bit of like,
yeah, they were just wrong.
Yeah, obviously. No, the way I think about these things is correct. Across the board. But that's the way that I divide them in my head. And I think that there's a good scriptural basis for that division as well. But even etymologically, like tithing means a tenth, and that's sort of that precept of the church we give to support the mission of the church. Almsgiving means the giving of mercy. It can take different forms, but monetary giving is like achieves a certain pride of place, both because of the support that it can give someone who is in need, and because of the hold that money can have on our own hearts. And so it, like, as a spiritual good, I don't know, I can, like I said, we'll get into the practical later. I don't want to go too much into details, but like, it is easier for me to give a sandwich in some way than to give money in such a way that it hurts.
Totally understand.
It's easier sometimes to give money in order to avoid encountering people that make us uncomfortable, right? So there's a flip side to it, but like, there is something deep in us that if my bank account has enough, gives me a sense of security. And that's what almsgiving challenges, because only God can give that security ultimately.
Right.
Otherwise, we're just building bigger barns and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, before we jump into one of the verses that I know we want to talk about today in Tobit, and maybe even bring in First Chronicles, I just want to address something that I'm sure a lot of people are thinking, even by us bringing in tithing or that. From my understanding, and all the documents I've read, the church actually does not mandate a percentage or a number that you have to give. Now, I don't want to say, I always get fearful of saying that though, because I think people use it to be like, yep, see, don't have to give a certain number. And then they just like kind of, it's a cop out. Just want to talk about that for a brief moment. True, correct. And then second is though, I believe, if I remember correctly from my notes and like time at Franciscan, is like, we get from Genesis and the story of Jacob, where it's like in Genesis, I believe I wrote it down, chapter 28, verse 22. I just pulled it up. It says, "And this stone which I've set for you a pillar shall be God's house, and for all you give me, I will surely give one tenth to you." And so I know that's where we get a little bit of the tenth as well. But I don't know, just speak to that for a moment. I don't want to focus so much on the number, because I think once we get into this, it's really going to be, hey, giving is like for our sanctification and our like ability to actually sacrificially give. And that might mean 40% for somebody. That might be 3% for somebody, right? I don't know. Let's just talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, no, that's good. So a couple different points on that. First, in any kind of moral decision we make, right, we have to engage some moral virtues in it, which include prudence. And prudence doesn't mean being cautious when we talk about like Catholic understanding of prudence. It means like understanding what's at stake and taking like careful account of all the details, applying the principles to the specific situation is what prudence does. And the church is really big into not taking away the place of individual prudential decisions for people. We're made in the image and likeness of God, and we're supposed to act in such a way that like we use these virtues. So the church doesn't want to treat us like little kids who can't make decisions,
right,
but rather wants to inform our conscience and help us to make those decisions in a way that ennobles us and recognizes our dignity. I hope that's not too abstract.
No, yeah, makes sense.
Just simply put, as a priest, I've had enough people say, you know, it would be a lot easier if sometimes y'all would just tell us what to do. Just tell me what to do. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works.
Right.
That's not what adults do in this. And the church wants us to be spiritually mature. And that means that like we have to go through the difficult process of making prudential decisions that are sometimes unclear, because that matures our relationship with God and also ourselves spiritually. Okay, more specifically for tithing, though, the biblical basis for this, both in that verse from Genesis 28 with Jacob at Bethel, but also like throughout the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, and especially in books like Leviticus, the Hebrew word underneath tithing there is eser or ya'asor, which means eser is just 10.
Right.
Like, it's been a while since I had in Hebrew, but achat, shtaim, shalosh, arba, I'm forgetting it. It's just like the five precepts, but 10 anyway is eser.
Okay.
And that's the word underneath this. So all throughout Leviticus, it'll say things like, collect tithes from the people. These also are descended from Abraham. Or set apart a tithe of all the yield of the seed that's brought in yearly from the field. So
right.
Not just money, but also produce, tithes from our soil, tithes from rural towns. These are like Deuteronomy, even in the prophets, Malachi, Nehemiah, you find this word. And even in Hebrews 7, it talks about how this kind of exchange between Abraham and Melchizedek and giving a tithe of the thing. So whenever that word tithe shows up in the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, you've got this Hebrew word, which means 10 underneath it. That's the biblical basis. But as Joey said, like what the church expects of us is to contribute for the support and the upkeep of the church. And it'll sort of point to this biblical precedent and say, like, we do have a precedent here. We do have a tradition, and it goes back very, very far. But we're not telling you that you have to give 10 or 9.5. Or, like, that's gotta come into the realm of
right.
your prudence.
Mm-hmm.
You're making a good prudential decision. And I know that can make people nervous, as I said, but like the basic principle for doing things like that is to try and love God as much as you can and then do what seems right. like that's kind of what it comes down to. Augustine says, love and then do as you will. And I'm not saying that you can do as you will in such a way that you act contrary to the revealed law of God. But with things that are in this prudential realm, you have to first dedicate yourself to the love of God.
And
try to think according to the revelation of who he is, and then do as you will, do what seems best
right.
in the situation. So long answer to that
Love
10th
it.
Thing, but it is important,
right?
That interplay between principles and how I apply them in a given situation.
Right. All right, well, let's jump in just a tiny bit more for today in our first part. Dealer's choice. You want to go First Chronicles or Tobit? You call it.
First Chronicles.
Okay, we're going to start here, First Chronicles. And I'm going to read a little bit from First Chronicles here.
Am I the dealer? Is that the choice, or are you the dealer?
I don't know. I just said it.
I never understood that.
Yeah,
term.
I don't even know what the saying
means.
So, First Chronicles 29. This is taken from 14 and 16. But who am I, and who are my people, that we should have the means to contribute so freely? For everything is from you, and what we give is what we have from you, Lord our God. All this wealth that we have brought together to build you a house for your holy name comes from you and is entirely yours. So we start at First Chronicles 29. I know, Father, I believe, you know, the big emphasis when I first heard you speak on tithing was setting the foundation with First Chronicles, because you mentioned everything is from you, meaning God. You want to break that open for us a little bit more?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to hear it in Hebrew, it just sounds kind of fun. It doesn't have like a deeper meaning. It's a very simple, but like that everything is from you. Sounds pretty cool. It's ki mimecha hakol. So, because from you is everything. So like there's not a, like hakol means everything in Hebrew, but right. There's not like a more profound meaning, but there's also not like a less profound meaning.
Right.
It's a very simple phrase. It means what it says. Everything is from God. Everything. God has created us. He has created the heavens and the earth and all that is within them. Everything is from him. And in that sense, everything is, it belongs to him. I don't really have anything of my own. And that's not to take away from proper subsidiarity and it's not getting into sort of political questions about ownership of property and goods and stuff like that. Like that's like God has created us to need things and to use things. And but on this most basic level, like everything is from him. And so it's not mine. I'm at best, when I'm at my best, a steward of those gifts, trying to use them as best as I can. It's kind of funny when like your go-to examples for things, just very certain things, come from literature, from movies more than normal analogies. But that's how we work. And when I think steward, I always just think of Lord of the Rings, like. Like Denethor is not the king. He's the steward of Gondor.
Mm-hmm.
And like there's just such a dramatic example in that. If y'all haven't seen it, then it's sort of a spoiler, I guess. But you should read the book anyway, not see the movie.
I was so waiting for that. I was like, just watch the movie. Don't read the book.
Yeah, the spirit of the propedeutic stage that I'm leading here at the seminary, our technology fast and everything. We'll watch movies together, by the way, not to get off track, but like very intentionally. Watch the movie for a purpose, not just kind of mindless entertainment. And other than that, we're not really using TV and technology a whole lot to give space to be able to cultivate a love of reading and the exercise the imagination,
right,
which is super important. So anyway, but I think of Denethor, who's not the king. He's been entrusted as the steward, the one who takes care of Gondor, and I think he did a pretty good job, and that kind of corrupted him and went to his head and all this stuff. But he couldn't give it up when the king came, and that's kind of a big deal for us to apply that back to really anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like when God asks for this back, when he asks for my, I don't know, iPad back, when I lose that, do I have a healthy enough detachment from that thing, recognizing that it's a gift? I like the iPad. It's pretty useful. But it's not part of me.
Right.
I don't own it in that absolute sense. Even something kind of trivial like that is a gift from God. And so much more, my bank account, like all my worldly possessions, everything that I have. This verse like cuts to that pretty directly. Who am I and who are my people that we should have the means to contribute so freely? For everything is from you, and we only give you what we have received from you.
Mm.
That's pretty cool. And I love the way that he starts off by saying, like, how lucky are we, basically, to have the means to contribute?
Yep.
So that should tell us something about the way the church approaches giving as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into more of that later. There's a very similar thing that goes on in 2 Corinthians when St. Paul's taking up a collection for the support of Jerusalem. He uses really similar language about like, y'all have supported me so well, and look at your just overabundant generosity. What a gift it is that you are able to be so generous. Like, not just a gift for Jerusalem, which needs some money because it's under persecution and the apostles are like, you know, it's a rough situation, but also what a gift it is, like, for the building up of your own community, because your generosity is going to be worth more than whatever that money could buy. The final thing in this verse, the second part of it, which is from verse 16, award to God all this wealth that we have brought together to build you a house in honor of your holy name comes from you and is entirely yours. I don't know how our listeners think of the place of worship, but like, one of the most kind of fundamental ways to define what a human being is someone who has the capacity and who is made to give God glory and praise and honor, to worship God. Like, that's at the heart of who we are. We're made in his image, which classically means that we have intellect and free will, but it's not just in this kind of like autonomous and arbitrary way that we would use those things. Like he's given us these gifts, and those gifts have as their final end, their goal, they're activated fully, I guess you could say.
Right.
We are fulfilled in how we're made most when we are worshiping God. That's what we're made for. He's made us for him, and we come most alive when we give everything back to him. It's the same dynamic that he reveals to us as the dynamic between the Father and the Son himself, in the Holy Trinity, that the Son receives everything from the Father. Mm-hmm. Jesus says this all over the place in John, especially. But he gives everything back to the Father, too. And he reveals that to us to teach us kind of what we're called to be like, since we are baptized into the adopted sonship of the family of God. Like, we take on this identity as sons in Jesus Christ. And so his relationship with the Father starts to inform, like, how we live. Okay. Going maybe too deep on there, but just
I think that's
final point.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, final point on this verse. Just notice that building the house in honor of God's holy name is a big deal. Like, that's the thing that's mentioned here. This is all about kind of dedication of the temple, building of the temple. And we do have in our culture, especially not trying to like throw anybody under the bus, but like there are Christian traditions that are really fairly prominent that have a really kind of like low key intentional approach to worship and spaces of worship. So like the simplicity of a totally white chapel with nothing in it. That starts because of those particular denominations' interpretation of not being able to make graven images. And I don't think it actually starts with a desire for simplicity or saying, I think that's a later sort of interpretation of like, we've got this totally simple space and look at how beautiful it is that it's simple.
Mm-hmm.
I can really contemplate God here, but that's not, again, like biblically, that's not the way the temple is or the tabernacle is. They're actually very ornate, not to be extravagant for the sake of extravagance, but to remind us of the beauty of creation itself. Like, the temple is decorated like the Garden of Eden inside. If you go look at like 1 Kings kind of 5-8, for instance, when Solomon is building and dedicating the temple, there's a lot of details. We normally just skip over that if we ever make it to that section, but like, look at all the floral stuff and think of the Garden of Eden. Like, it's meant to reflect the Garden of Eden, which God created for himself as a temple to dwell in. And now, like, within that temple of creation itself, where God has chosen to dwell, we're also like building a specific dwelling place.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, God is infinite. He's not confined to a right. place that's not dwelling in that sense. But like, this is a consecrated place set apart for us to encounter him.
Mm-hmm.
And it matters what kind of stuff we put in there, what materials we use. And that's part of the tithing for the sake of the upkeep of the church. This is a really big deal for me right now, because at the seminary, we just built a new oratory. This propedeutic stage that I'm leading, it's the fancy name for the first year of seminarians. Like, we had to build another chapel in the seminary in order for that program to run as the church has asked it to,
mm-hmm.
With kind of a separate schedule during the day, separate schedule of prayer. It's kind of like a novitiate for diocesan life. And that oratory is beautiful. And it's the first time that I've ever had a hand in like figuring out which things we need to put in there, mm-hmm. in saying like, I could get this candlestick or this candlestick or this one. I could get these linens or these type or these type, and having to make that decision between like, what can we afford and what looks cheap?
Right.
So not to go too much into temple building or whatever, but
no, but like, I think it's a good point like you mentioned, no one ever goes into the Apple store and says, man, they spent so much to make it look nice and the screen and this and that. But times you go into a church and be like, why are they spending money on these ornate things in this? Shouldn't it be given to the poor, you know, or this or that or whatever other, you know, complaint people have. And I think it's good reminder for us as we start to jump into this. And we're going to pause there for today because we always think, man, we're only going to get through, you know, we'll talk about tithing all in one episode and we'll be done. And so I knew this would be a multi-part
series.
And then
I ramble for 12 minutes.
Yeah. But it's what we live for. And looking forward to the precept series so we can know all five precepts. I know all five precepts because I had to teach it in RCIA back in the day. But anyway, I think we're going to pause there. Other things, though, if people have questions specifically about tithing, you can go to our new website, prodigalandthepriest.com. Excited about that. Don't look it up right now, Father Paul, because when this comes out, people, it'll be ready. So still adjusting some photos and things like that. But prodigalandthepriest.com, there'll be a part on there that says ask a question. You can submit it there. We're in the process of redoing our archives, of putting them all there, just so it was easy access. People have asked, like, so not affiliated with the church or anything with that is, it's not, the Prodigal and the Priest is not part of the entity of St. Anne's. And so we've just kind of separated and moved it so that Father Paul and I could, you know, manage it, and that wouldn't be a burden for anybody at the church or anything like that. And it started out of, COVID and all that time to be able to give people a listen, and has kind of evolved from there and where we are in our life. So I think, I just want to encourage people as we wrap up today to make sure to take a look at that new website. Go there, download the episode, share it with family and friends, and make sure to submit a question if you have it. On behalf of Joey Scansella and Father Paul Bechter, we want to say take care.
God bless.